LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Amit Goswami, who joins us to discuss his book Quantum Economics, Unleashing the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. If you enjoy the show, you might like to explore the extensive archive which is available at LegalizeFreedom.com. That's Legalize-Freedom.com. You can spell Legalize with a Z or an S. And there you'll also find a donate page should you wish to contribute towards keeping this site up and running. In view of the 2007-2008 global economic meltdown and the financial chaos that has followed in its wake, it's obvious that the current economic systems are not working. But economists don't have a clue about how to successfully modify the existing models. Meanwhile, political institutions around the world are bogged down in paralysis and conflict, and still see only the same old ineffective methods for dealing with the crisis, either the demand side or the supply side model of government intervention. Quantum economics is written for both the business person and the consumer, and touches upon important issues like creativity and ethics in business and finance. It takes us into 21st century vital energy technologies which are already feasible and which will form an essential part of the economic picture in the future. It informs the reader that the time has come to look for jobs that bring meaning and value into their personal lives. It gives quantum hints for new business leadership, a viable science of manifestation, how to revitalize the business arena, how to transform the energy of money, how to deal with globalization and keep the free market free, how to achieve an economy of sustainability and prevent economic meltdowns, and how to eliminate, once and for all, poverty and hunger. The old way of doing things is broken. It's time for something new. Hello and welcome, Amit. Thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Oh, glad to be here, Greg.
Today, Amit, we're going to be talking about your new book, which is entitled Quantum Economics, Unleashing the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. Before we dive into that, just tell listeners a little bit about your background and your work in general.
Well, I am actually a quantum physicist. And, you know, the first question comes up, of course, all the time, what's a physicist doing with economics? But, of course, consciousness gets into physics in a major way via the quantum worldview. So the whole idea is that we get a clear understanding of what consciousness is, what consciousness does, and what is the relationship of consciousness with human social systems. And the fact that, in fact, great things in economics, which has been discovered before by luminaries such as Adam Smith, when you look at from consciousness point of view, it seems to be very clear, and it also becomes clear how to take it forward. So me being a quantum physicist is a huge strength to come into the field of economics.
Well, perhaps we should start with a few comments about economics, as you mentioned Adam Smith there. And since the global economic crisis of 2007-2008, which, by the way, hasn't really ended. It's still kind of going on, no matter what politicians or even economists say. We've seen the global economic system in a kind of gridlock, and it really is utterly broken. It was designed for a previous age that had different priorities and different ideas, and that's really where we are now, and that's what we're seeing now really cannot be fixed. And we've tried to patch this thing up so many times. It is time for a new way of looking at things.
Yeah, that too, of course. And a new way of looking at it has to come from entirely new directions. And this is where the movement is so difficult, because we live in an age where we have settled for a worldview which says there is only matter. Matter and movement of matter explains everything. And that, unfortunately, has put such a limiting straitjacket on the economic system, because in this view, economic products are good products only if it's a material product that you can see, that you can feel, that you can touch, that you can investigate with material senses and develop that way. Forgetting completely that we have in the human experience much more than matter. We have mind, we have feelings, we have intuitions, and these things are going uncharted, these things are not explored, and these things, nobody thinks of them as economic product, although we routinely do have some products that sells meaning. And even the archetypes are not entirely gone unnoticed, but not in a concerted way. Nobody thinks of them that way. That these are viable economic areas to expand. So what you have with materialist economics is that because of scarcity of material products, material resources, energy included, we have a very limiting expansion possibility. And so what we are seeing today is the beginning of that limit. You know, it started showing up with oil prices going higher and higher back in the 70s, part of it was the political situation, but mainly it was reflecting the fact that sooner or later, oil is going to be a scarce commodity, and energy is going to be a scarce commodity. And because we didn't have the appropriate science at that time, of course, we could not do anything. Nobody could think of doing anything in terms of changing economics and changing economy, the scope of economy. But now we can. Now we have entire science, new science of investigation in what we call vital energies that we feel. Mental, I already mentioned. We already know a little bit about how to deploy mental meaning into the economy. And so a whole new economics can open up where expansion is unlimited. There is no limit you can put on how much you can feel, how much love you can feel. There is no limit on things like happiness, which become commodity to the new expanded economics. So this is what I have been able to show in quantum economics, that if you are not hesitant, but take the radical step of changing Adam Smith's capitalism, forget all the materialist changes that have taken place in the ensuing 250 years, forget all that. That's only some good, some bad, very mixed results. We really have to go back and get the idea that consciousness is part and parcel of our worldview. And as soon as you can include consciousness in our economic dealings, the better off we are.
One of the major problems, as you mentioned, with the current economic system as it is it disregards the finite nature of the planet and the resources on it. And the whole general model has been predicated on infinite growth. And that's what we see economists and politicians reaching for when we hit the buffers, when we run into trouble, is to try and grow the economy. And the system demands infinite growth. But of course, as you say rightly, that's entirely impossible.
No, not at all impossible, because these subtle energies, as they're called, they are infinite places to expand, and we already know how to make products in those areas, and we already know how to adjust the economics to that situation. What we need to do is to have entrepreneurs putting the whole thing into practice, and that will come regardless of who starts it when. But obviously, we need some very creative people to recognize the opportunity, see the absolute hopelessness of trying to expand the economy on the basis of any fiddling with the materialist ideas of how to keep the economy going. We are never going to be able to succeed to doing that. You know, sustainability is now everybody's problem, and it is everybody's judgment that we cannot sustain the materialist expansions that we are contemplating. We are contemplating without really much thinking for the last 50 years. It just is doomed to failure. And what we are seeing today in worldwide recession, ongoing stagnation of economy, Greece is just one sad example, but really the point is that we cannot sustain the economy at the level that we are running with materialist products only, and this is just the beginning. It will only get worse. It cannot get better. The other thing is to notice is that the creativity and innovation in material technologies are also limited. Nobody notices these things very much, but the fact is very, very few new ideas now. And the new ideas are purely on basis of completely unreasonable faith. For example, many people talk about expanding into space. And so we still spend billions and billions of dollars into getting pictures of Pluto, and all that sounds very good, but there is no economic benefit out of any of this. This idea that people will pay money for taking a trip to the moon, these are ideas to play with. And sure, there are billionaires who might be able to do that and might be persuaded to take on the hardship. It's really not an adventure, believe me. It's a huge hardship to go through the training and all this adventure in that sense, if you are willing to do all that. But I don't think billionaires are capable of going through that kind of hardship. So it's just really pipe dreams that we are talking about expanding in the arena of space. Expanding in other things like nanotechnology, so far no promise, no actual promises. Well, robotization of human labor, that is going to happen. But that opens up a Pandora's box. Yes, we have good robots, we'll have robot cars, and we have robots taking care of our basic needs. All that is true. But that is getting rid of human labor in a major way. So what do we do with human beings? Nobody's giving thought to it. The new economics, the way I propose it, human capital is a major new investment. How to do it? We know the know-how already. We have the know-how. We really need people to look at what is happening in this new science, in this new economic arenas, vital energy, mental meaning, and archetypal values, and see the prospects of expansion. You will be astounded.
Yeah, of course, when I mentioned that infinite growth was impossible, I did, of course, simply mean in a materialist sense. Right. And that's one of the great benefits that you point out about these more subtle areas, which for potential expansion in terms of human fulfillment and meaning, which actually are much more meaningful to us, really, because not only is the materialist economic model running into trouble, it is not delivering the promise, really, of satisfaction, because people are not, as a rule, are not happy with just, a second car, a third car, a second house, another holiday. It just doesn't add up.
And sixth-generation cell phones, don't forget those. although communication will continue to be a good market, and that's where materialist economy will continue to flourish. That is one of the exciting aspects of it. But any materialist economic model based on energy is bound to fail, because energy sooner or later will become a scarce commodity, and we'll have to devise technologies and industries which are very local. This idea of transporting energy through large distances, which is hugely expensive, got to go sooner or later, because it will become so expensive to do that we won't be able to afford it anymore. So, that's the future of the materialist economy. It becomes much like, you remember John Shoemaker. He was a Gandhian economist. Small is Beautiful is a book that he wrote. The future of materialist economy, if you are limited to that, would be very close to that small is beautiful kind of thing. Just simply from the point of view of any product which is energy sensitive, energy intensive, just cannot succeed. So as far as materialist economy is concerned, we would have to become more and more, go in the opposite direction than it's going now. Now the tendency is to go global. We have more global corporations and stuff, and obviously outsourcing is very popular, and that of course pulls up the developing countries, and which is not such a bad idea. And it also opens the people of developed countries, developed economies, towards exploration of more what you were talking about, meaning and satisfaction. So that part is all good, and it is within the scope of the movement of consciousness in the right direction. But once that starts happening, then we have to really ask what gives people meaning and satisfaction. The idea that material goods, pleasure, is the only source of human satisfaction has got to go, because this is just not true. Human beings find satisfaction in meaning. In meaningless stuff, sensory pleasures, they can find momentary distractions. They can forget their sorrow with momentary bursts of endorphin molecules in the brain, and that does give you a kind of a escape, but it's temporary. It does not give any kind of solid satisfaction in life. So invariably, once one satisfies the basic needs, as Abraham Maslow said 50 years ago, one becomes interested in higher needs. What is the meaning of my life? What am I doing here? How can I find a satisfactory job? How can I engage myself in doing something to satisfy my soul? These are the questions people ask. And in the advanced economies, people are already asking that. There, in underdeveloped economies, you still find a lot of people struggling so hard to just make things go, and they don't ask such questions. But fortunately, the cultures they live have society at a much wider level, so they get some connections of consciousness anyways, and so those cultures are actually quite stable in spite of their poverty. But in the advanced economies, what has happened is that people are already quite isolated, and they don't get this kind of human connections anymore. So life really becomes dull drudgery, because you have to be, you cannot be satisfied with material goods and services, but that's what you have to make do with, because human connection is no longer available. So it's a very weird situation, and we have to really think hard and bring back the idea that we have more experiences, more facilities in the human availability than just consuming material goods and material pleasures, and open ourselves up to processing, exploring meaning and archetypal values. This is where our satisfaction comes from, archetypes. Love, beauty, justice, truth, abundance, self. These are the things we investigate, and then we find satisfaction, or you discover how to love someone without any conditions imposed, how to be just to another person, how to be good to your neighbor. These are the ideas that gives us satisfaction, that satisfies our soul. So can these ideas be subject of economic commodity? Yes, they can. This is the whole point that we are discovering. Once we get rid of the prejudice, money cannot buy happiness. Once we recognize that these prejudices are false, yes, money can buy happiness, but not in the way that you think. It won't buy material happiness in terms of material products, but money can buy happiness if money gives you the access to a very, very happy person. Then you could just sit in the proximity of this happy person and you become happy. I have had such experiences. Yeah, I'll tell you a story. My wife and I were traveling the banks of Ganges in Rishikesh, India. And suddenly we got called into a lecture where we are told Laughing Baba, literally this is the name of the fellow, Laughing Baba is giving a talk, a discourse. Would you like to come to and listen? We said, of course. So we went. And we sit down, and we are listening to this lecture in Hindi, which I don't understand very well, although I'm from India, but Hindi was not my language. So my attention is distracted. I'm looking around, and then I see something strange. Everybody has a smile on their face. Everybody. I literally mean everybody. I look at myself, and I find that inadvertently, I'm also kind of smiling because I'm happy. And then it occurred to me, I'm happy because this guy is speaking in his proximity. That's all that is needed to be happy. And this is why this fellow is called Laughing Baba. In his presence, everybody starts smiling happily. And so you make the connection, two by two, two and two. If such people were abound, plenty of them to find, then we couldn't we enact this thing that ancient cultures have in plenty. We could just have these people set up any place. You know, they don't have to be in a marketplace and be with people. They can as well be in a corporate office and be with people. For them, it makes no difference. The fountain of happiness, once it's opened up, is always open for people to share. So if we do that and place them in a corporate office, imagine the whole place will become a happy place. And productivity will go up, and these things are no longer just things of idle imagination. Already studies have been made, and if offices are more vitally healthy, if offices are more happy, if people are happy, then their productivity goes up. Indeed, it does, by leaps and bounds, like 30%. So it's a huge profit we are looking at out of human capital of these people. Do we know how to manufacture these people? This is where we have made a breakthrough. In the olden days, they were doing on their own, and they were developing ideas and top transformation all on their own, and it took people a long time, 20, 30 years. And, of course, isolation, because they didn't know any better. Today, we know what is happening, what needs to happen in order for the human psyche to transform into such states of unending happiness. And because we have the know-how, we can manufacture these people. Although it sounds like, you know, still kind of imagination, but it can come true.
I remember during our first interview in 2012, we were talking about sort of new paradigm conferences and events and meetings where people get together. And I'd been to several of these, and a lot of the information I was already familiar with. I would see the same people there quite often. And you pointed out that what was really taking place for a lot of people there was people coming together to share a certain energy. And in terms of the economic model here, you said to me, you know, well, would I go for a weekend somewhere to be with like-minded people and feel good? You know, would I pay $50, $100 for that? Absolutely, I would.
Yeah, I think that comment still remains valid. In fact, that's part of the how the ideas grew inside of me, because I realized all of a sudden, after talking to you, maybe that was a trigger. But even before then, for a while, I've been realizing that those conferences serve as a meeting point, as you said. But it's more than that. It's the place where the participants are getting inspired. And it's this inspiration that is the basis for keeping ongoing work on personal growth. People cannot maintain sometimes the dullness of doing a practice like meditation. People cannot maintain the dullness of, this is where, you know, materialist products have an advantage. They give momentary pleasure. Often these practices, on the other hand, unless you do it a little, you cannot get anything that is easy to do kind of thing. Easy without effort eventually comes, but it takes a while. And sometimes it takes inspirations periodically to get going until that easy without effort meditation, where you want to meditate, that feeling comes. So this is the problem with any kind of transformational work. But human beings have been doing that for millennia, and now we know the mechanism, why the mind gets jaded, and what has to be done. Well, they have to be inspired periodically. But now you see the economic point. So these inspirations at conferences, what people are doing, they're buying it. They're really buying it quick. I mean, literally, they're paying their money to come and pick up inspiration at these conferences. The information content that they get, as you said, they're the same people. So you already know that. they already know what they're going to say. I mean, some people, okay, I hope I'm a little bit original, more original than that, and everybody gets something new. But really, new content is still, you know, it is basically the old stuff, maybe half an hour you get some new stuff. But that's not the point. They come really for the energy, for the inspiration.
One of the problems with the business as usual as things are now is that the economy has kind of metastasized beyond any reasonable limits. And it's almost as if there's meant to be something fundamental about it. We hear politicians talking about the economy, you know, as if there's no economy, then everything goes away. And when I speak of this, I'm talking about the old materialist paradigm. And that has been allowed to trump everything. You know, everything has to justify itself in terms of money. Individuals, organizations, even countries we see now, you know, with Greece and the environment, the biosphere, all of that is trumped by the economy. And that's something that needs to change and will change.
Yeah, there was some recognition now that quality of living does matter. Bhutan is the only country which has officially recognized the importance of quality of living in economic consideration. But I think it's not totally a foreign concept anymore. Even United Nations did something, putting out, you know, something about quality of living and stuff. So there is now some awareness. We can build on that. There is some awareness that people need inspiration. We can build on that. There is, of course, the book industry and inspirational video movies. They continue to sell a little bit, but we have to build on that. These are ways that we already know how to do things, and these ways can be promoted a little bit more, but nothing much more is going to come out of it. We have to go the next step. It is the next step is where we are ready to make big investment and exploration of what have become vital energy. So the new economy, 21st century economy, will be based on deploying vital energy, the energy of life itself. So what is this energy of life? Well, it turns out we now have the science. There are energies that we feel. They are not material energies. They are non-material energies. They are made out of what Rupert Sheldrake calls morphogenetic field. That may sound like a big name, but it's really quite simple. They are the blueprints of biological form. And whenever a biological form, an organ, comes into play doing something useful for our physical body, these morphogenetic fields, which gives them the program of function, they also are activated, and they do something in our feeling level. We get the experience of feeling. So, of course, the most familiar feeling that we already know is heart chakra. We know the feeling of heart chakra comes whenever we are in quote-unquote love, romantic love. Love is associated with romance, and this is generally well known. Now, what is not so well known is this, that we all know that roses are very popular with romantic people. That we know. Why? Is it the scent? Is it the material scent that which are just molecules? No, it isn't. It isn't. Because if you make a rose perfume out of rose, everybody who has experienced such perfumes or their women have experienced such perfumes, they know that, no, it does not give any kind of romantic feeling. It's just another scent. It's pleasant to the nose, but that's it. So what is in the rose that misses in the perfume? This is the question. Roses are macro objects. They have a macro form, and the vital energies come with only the macro form. So the vital energy of rose, when you extract the molecules, is thrown out. But now we have the technology to revitalize the perfume. We put back that energy that we threw out with the macro object. We put it back in the perfume. And then this revitalized perfume will give the woman not only the fragrance of rose, but also the romantic feeling that rose brings in the bed. And this is what people are looking for, this new product. We have reached a kind of level of life as quality matters. Quality matters meaning my feelings are under attack through stress all day, and then at night how do I get romantic? How do I avoid that syndrome of not tonight, dear, I have a headache? How do we avoid that? We avoid that by getting help from natural products like rose, which of course we cannot use anymore because we don't have, you know, this is also very expensive to buy roses regularly for your bed. But if you buy this perfume, and one perfume can last, as we know, quite some time, then you have the problem solved, problems of romance solved. Now, tell me this. Don't you see a good market for this kind of thing? I can give you this kind of idea, so many of them, just ready to deploy, ready to deploy.
We're already seeing, actually, you're talking about vital energy and about its importance and about opportunities going forward. And some people might be sort of a little bit unsure if they have not heard the term before, like, you know, what's he talking about? But we're seeing a lot of movement in this area already, you know, the beginnings of something. And you mentioned, you're talking about roses, that crosses over into the world of plants and growing food. And that's something that our food is missing in a great many cases today, is vital energy. But other areas, whether it be from, you know, the arts, movies, music, books, you all alluded to, alternative ways of doing healthcare, almost in every aspect, if not indeed every aspect of life, there are opportunities going here forward.
Yes, healthcare is a major one. Healthcare, of course, is a very serious major one. And fortunately, we are quite ahead in that particular area. We are quite ahead, and indeed, Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, homeopathic medicine, they all use vital energy. And, you know, I have written a book on it, Quantum Doctor, and the popularity of the book suggests that, indeed, alternative medicine doctors are quite appreciative of the new developments of quantum science, where we can give a theoretical backup to these ideas that are already quite popular as a practice. But they didn't have theory to back them up. Now, alternative medicine has a better theory to back them up than materialist theories. You know, materialist medicine often is just trial and error. There is no theory behind it. It's very hard to make theories at the level of human body. It's much too complex. So mostly the pharmaceuticals just do trial and error clinical data to help them build the concept of what is good and what is not. But in the case of the Ayurvedic or traditional Chinese or acupuncture, we have a much better theory in terms of vital energy. We know more precisely what is happening, and therefore the control, scientific control, is much better. Although we do need new clinical studies too. I'm not underestimating the importance of clinical studies. We should have them. But at least here, not only clinical studies, but we also have a theory. Whereas materialist medicine hardly has any theory except the germ theory or germ theory, which does not always apply. It applies in a few cases, in which case it is fine. But then when it doesn't apply, what do we do? What do we do for cancer, which is not basically not much in terms of theory? But in vital energy, we already have a good theory of cancer, and those cases of vital energy where this theory applies, we are ready to launch clinical studies and see the efficacy of vital energy medicines in this area.
What you're talking about here really is across the board in economic life and in, you know, every other aspect, is a new paradigm, and the elite and the establishment, particularly since the 07-08 crisis, have really orientated themselves around retrenching and doing more of the same. What I'm saying is, if you shut out that noise that's coming at us from the mainstream, is more and more individual people and small groups, typically local as well, which is another trend that you talk about, who are actually choosing something different. They're just kind of getting on with it. So as time goes on, increasingly it becomes apparent that we can't just go back to business as usual. The people who are leading the way have already started this. And I notice it in many, many different aspects of life, people doing things differently. Localism is definitely a big trend, organic food. And these things that we're told are not viable and they're only for a minority. Well, that kind of can be a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, really.
Yeah, this is a very, very good point. And look, some of these trends are already there. And they, when you see that what needs to be done, you also have work cut out for you in avoiding what not to be done. What's not to be done, you know, like Monsanto rice, genetically modified stuff. That's not to be done. Why? Because the vital energies, the which is the basis of nutrition, you're not sure that you're getting the same vital energy when you genetically modify food. Most likely, the vital energies change, and they're not to be consumed by us. So it has to be vital energy that suits human beings, and that requires an evolutionary connection with the kind of food that we have been always eating, which is the non-genetically modified stuff. The genetic modification idea sounded good, but it's really extremely hazardous when you consider it from a vital energy point of view. And I'm glad that it is still can be stopped. And this is going to be also a general attitude that we are trying to build, that let's have the food as organic as possible, not even grown by chemicals, because that too might potentially be harmful to the vital energy content. And the importance of vital energy, as soon as you get that, we can start also the idea of revitalization in case some chemicals have to be used. Like water is a good example. Water has to be chemically treated in most places, and it's already scarce enough so that there's no hope of supplying natural water to most of the people of the earth. So we give up on that. But we can, it turns out, take chemically treated water and revitalize the water. So this idea of revitalizing water would be a huge, huge industry, much, much bigger than ordinary bottled water has been.
Another trend that I notice along these lines is people who have, particularly people who've been thrown out of work. There are some people who are looking to do different things who are already in work, but many of those who've been thrown out of work since the financial crisis have opted not to return to work in the same way that they did before, in many cases because they have no choice. But this was one of the big promises in decades gone by, you know, this sort of technologically dazzling future where robots would do all the work and we would spend time, as you mentioned earlier, going on holidays, day trips to the moon. But it hasn't turned out like that. And again, the politicians in the mainstream are talking about getting people back into work and creating jobs, but all the time those jobs are being outsourced due to globalization or they're being mechanized. So how to square this circle is having politicians running in circles at the minute. But as you point out, there is another way, and the paradigm shift that you're talking about opens up avenues here. Whereby we don't have to sit all day scratching our heads worrying about the millions of unemployed and how we're going to get them back to working in factories. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, actually, I have a very simple remedy which I have suggested in the book Quantum Economics, which is that in recession time, when you have to pay unemployment insurance to a large number of people, right now the only requirement that we have on these people is that they give the proof that they are looking for jobs, which is absolutely empty of any meaning because there are no jobs. That's why they're unemployed. So it's a trivial thing that they do, but they have to show some documents and they collect their check. Instead of that, we say that, look, all you have to do is to give proof that you are taking some vital energy or other inner work, that kind of practice, like meditation, tai chi, pranayama, yoga, all these things that are available now. So you have to show a certificate that you are practicing, you have joined these practice groups that will be made available. So that stimulates these groups, which is the vital energy economy that I'm talking about, part of it. But what happens to the people who are taking these courses? Well, they get trained to enjoy these practices. And it does happen. They will get jaded eventually, but that takes about a year. For a year, you maintain excellent enthusiasm because any initial practitioner of any of these practices get huge benefit. So therefore, you can easily maintain their enthusiasm for 6 months to a year. And that will imply a very large number of yoga teachers, Tai Chi teachers, martial art teachers, huge, huge scope. And what happens then? Well, these people lose interest after about a year. That's about the time when recession, normal recessions end, and businesses regroup, and these people will have jobs again. So this is a way of avoiding recession. And this is also a way of avoiding inflation, because as these people have jobs and they start having money in their pocket, they will remember that, hey, it's not necessary to buy a pair of shoes every time I feel kind of discouraged and pessimistic about myself. I can also go and join a yoga group again, because I'm feeling that need once again for vital energy. That's what yoga is about. It's a vital energy exercise. So you go and enroll, and again, you subsidize this yoga industry. So what happens then? Again, the yoga industry is coming to rescue of the traditional situation, but now in an inflationary situation. So inflation is too few goods, too much money is chasing too few goods. But people are not chasing anymore the material goods, because they have an alternative to consume the subtle, vital energies. So you see how the idea of Maslow, that you satisfy higher needs when your basic needs are satisfied, you go towards higher needs, how that is rescuing the economy from getting deep into inflation also. So both inflation and recession can be avoided by opening up in this very subtle way, a little bit government intervention, but very little bit. I mean, right now, government makes unnecessary bridges and unnecessary road repairs to keep economy going. Now, this is much better than that, because you are building human capital eventually. You are building human consumers for a new product in the market. Because the same people who have some idea now of vital energy, they'll be more interested in the revitalized products that we are talking about, in the organic foods that we are talking about. How much money, can you imagine how much money we could save if coordinated all the expenses, medical expenses that people go through when they eat non-nutritious food and all this junk food in the name of keeping the economy alive? And this is just, people just don't think. We on one hand, we spend huge amount of money for healthcare. On the other hand, we have huge amount of materialist economy going into junk food. Now, this is inexplicable. Can we make tasty, nutritious food? You bet. But they have to be made with paying attention to vital energy. That's where the taste of food comes from. You can artificially create that taste, true, in fast food. But it's extremely artificial and will not produce any nutrition. Can people become aware of that? That we can, this is really artificial and this is real? Yes, people can be aware of that if they're given training. Once you are trained, you will never go back to the artificial again, because it just will not satisfy. You know that if it satisfies, next morning you will have bowel movement problem. So people are very aware of these things already. And with training, they can be made even more aware.
Important aspects that you address in the book are also the idea of the profit motive in all of this, because, of course, that's a central feature of capitalism, and also the nature of money itself. And it's not that making a profit is somehow a problem. It's a question of if you're delivering value for that. And as we mentioned earlier, whether it's from organic food through to new paradigm events, people will be happy to pay for genuine value where they feel that they've gained something. And the nature of money itself, you're talking about money could not or could buy happiness, it has become corrupted, because ultimately it was a neutral thing. You know, it's just a medium of exchange. And that can change going forward as well. We're not advocating doing without money. You know, it's sort of, money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money, as they say. And that's been part of the problem. You know, businesses that make money from money, which has become such a huge part of our economy. So the idea of profit and the nature of money itself, those can be recovered for what they are, which is neither good nor bad. They're just, you know, it depends on the intentions behind them.
Yeah, that and the other thing that has happened is that because people are so desperate, there's nothing but matter, that philosophy is, so what has happened in the, look, materialist economy, if you just have materialist goods, production and consumption, eventually you get into a problem. you will have a huge amount of money, but you will have nothing. What can you do with it? Because recession time comes and recessions are deep. So you have these huge amounts of money, but no investment is quite safe. So what do you do with the money? So they figured out back in the 80s that you can have this money and you can gamble with it. You can have your jollies by gambling. And so we created, initially it was quite innovative and probably did some good because it brought capitalism to middle class. I'm talking about things like mutual funds, which enable middle class to invest into stock market without too much risk. And people started doing that. But then they got the idea, oh, but if we can do this, why not go to the next step? So they have another more subtle product called derivative of these stocks, like what are their future values. So take a market commodity. What is the value of this commodity, let's say, 50 years from now? And you can then make a product out of it called futures. So general name for these things is derivative. So not only money, not only stock, which is the next abstraction, but even more abstract than stocks, which is a extension of the idea of value from a piece of paper by guesswork, which is sort of gambling. So much of the economy today is this investment banking economy. That's a 10 times bigger economy than actually the production consumption economy that we have. This is not generally well known. Of course, the people who do these things, they know it very well. Then this is where the money is, this is where the market is, this is why today the stock market is kind of detached from the production consumption economy. It tells you nothing about the condition of the economy. The stock markets, they move higher and higher sometimes, but does not reflect the fact that we have economic doldrum or recession still going on. So these anachronisms have been created by having this very artificial sense of what value is. Because we have moved away from that idea that real value has to have some permanence. Now, real value is about consensus. If people agree that, yes, this future that you have has value, you have money. If people don't agree, this is what happened with the derivatives that are called CDO, collateral debt obligation based on housing mortgage. Their value, people were agreeing one moment, and in the next moment, houses are not selling anymore. There is a panic, and these things lost its value. So overnight, trillions of dollars were gone from the economy. And this is a major factor of why we had such a big recession. So this kind of thing is happening because people have lost touch with what really is subtle. You cannot pick subtle money. Money never going to have the ability of representing subtle by through consensus. But there is already the subtle. We already have subtle aspects of our experience. So suppose you invest money in the subtle aspects, then we don't need subtle money to invest our money, which is subtle money is a gambling. But when you invest money to get a real subtle product, those subtle product is reality. Because the engagement with subtle product will change the human being, will produce human capital, so it eventually goes into capital once again. This is what you have to realize. Just as real estate is solid capital, similarly, a human being can be solid capital. It has value, real value, not the artificial value of a future or artificial value of a CDO. It will never crash.
Today we've been talking about your new book, Quantum Economics, Unleashing the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. There are so many things in this that we haven't managed to get to today, partly because my Skype exploded halfway through the interview, but not least of which is the whole quantum physics aspect of this and what it tells us about our reality and how we should act. But what we're talking about here is a way of going forward beyond systems around us now, economic, that are crumbling, a materialist, energy-intensive way of doing things that's falling apart. Now, just as a closing point, I would say that there is tremendous resistance to making changes for obvious reasons, because we like to stick with what we know, whether it's elites in establishment who profit from this, or whether it's us as individuals who, you know, we have our own human foibles and we don't like change and we want to cling on to the familiar. But ultimately, that has to be overcome, that resistance.
Right, right. And this is the very good place to end, because how do we do this? So we do this by realizing that every science is a paradigm based on certain worldview assumption. So Adam Smith's worldview assumption was based on a philosophy that is called modernism, which has both matter and mind. We don't realize that Adam Smith worked in a society which was not really a materialist society. And therefore, in his time, the economy, capitalist economy actually worked because it had the mind implicitly included. As we became more and more, came towards more and more of the materialist worldview, we started excluding the mind. We started excluding the human factor. And this is what largely is responsible for the present situation. So what we have to bring back is the human, put the human factor back in, human experiences back in, and put these human subtle experiences as economic commodity, which Adam Smith could not do because at that time technology was just not available that we have today to revitalize products. That technology was just not available. People talked about vital energy those days. They felt it, but they didn't know how to deploy it as an economic commodity. These ideas have developed in the last centuries, and these ideas now can be added to Adam Smith's ideas. So this is a natural shift of the paradigm. Just as quantum physics replaced Newtonian physics, similarly, Adam Smith capitalism has to be replaced with the help of the new economics based on this Maslow's idea of hierarchy of needs, because these needs are basic to us. This is the basic human experience, that we have higher needs. We have, after we satisfy our material needs, we need to satisfy our meaning needs. We need to have a job which gives us meaning, which gives us value. So these things, now is the time to introduce them as commodities. Now is the time to go ahead, introduce something that is of infinite extent, infinite expansion, because there's no limit to vital energies, there's no limit to mental meaning, and so we'll never have to worry about sustainability. It automatically would be sustained because material goods will not need to expand anymore. We have enough energy to sustain us for a long time. That gives us a huge amount of research necessary to deploy forms of energy which we don't today deploy because we don't know how to deal with the pollution aspect of it. But we can do all this. And we can do all this and therefore go ahead with the new economics very easily. We need some creative entrepreneurs to start it at large scale. As you said, Greg, earlier, that it's already going on to some extent. There is a lot of movement in the vital energy deployment schemes, and indeed in medicine we already have it in some ways. But we need a coordinated effort. We need recognition from the academia that, yes, this extension of Adam Smith capitalism is absolutely the correct way to go, and it will eventually replace then the economics too. You know, the old economics can be called Newtonian classical economics, the new economics I call quantum economics. Time for quantum economics has come.
Amit, as mentioned, your book is widely and easily available. Tell folks about your website and anything else you'd like to share.
Well, www.amitgoswami.org, AMITGOSWAMI, AmitGoswami, one word, .org. That's the website, and there's an email there. If you want to write to me, ask questions, I would be happy to answer. And the whole job of this movement that quantum economics is part of is called quantum activism. If you like some of the things that you heard, we spoke a little of quantum physics, but believe me, quantum physics is essential to get these experiences legalized within science, and then quantum physics coming in some other ways too, very essential ways like creativity. You cannot have creativity without the quantum. So this very quick interview, and Greg told you about the problem of the technological problem, but I'm very happy to be with you. And if you like quantum physics, if you like what you hear, please join our movement called Quantum Activism. This is an activistic movement to change ourselves and society according to the dictum of the quantum worldview. It is time that we move on beyond the Newtonian worldview, which is very limiting, is almost like a straitjacket, which has limited human progress, essentially destroying human civilization. It is time that we move on. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, Amit, thank you so much for joining us today once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
You're welcome.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please check out the website. That's LegalizeFreedom.com, Legalize-Freedom.com, where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics, including world affairs, politics and economics, science and technology, religion and spirituality, conspiracy, and alternative history. You can also browse and buy a range of books and DVDs from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.